This is the Ethanol Report. The Renewable Fuels Association held a telephone press conference the day before EPA's public hearing June 9th on the proposed rulemaking for the renewable fuels standard. A number of reporters, ranging from national news services to farm and environmental publications, tuned in and asked some good questions about the impact of EPA's calculation of indirect land use changes and other aspects of the proposed rule. We're going to take a listen to some of those questions and the answers given by RFA President Bob Dineen and Vice President for Research Jeff Cooper. Martin Ross with Illinois Farm Week asked them to talk about the differences between domestic and international indirect land use changes.
What constitutes, I guess, a viable, reasonable domestic land use projection, land use impact? And maybe this is for Jeff Cooper, too, but how does the satellite technology, the modeling now used for international indirect land use, what are some of the flaws there?
Martin, that's a good question. I'm going to have Jeff answer it specifically, but I will say generally, we have not opposed EPA looking at indirect effects domestically. We think that's what the Congress had intended. Our issue has been all along with expanding this to include international effects for which there is very little data, there is absolutely no modeling, and no real way to connect a link between a farmer's decision to grow grain in the United States for ethanol production and a farmer's decision in the Amazon to cut down a tree for the lumber industry. That is why our focus has been on limiting the EPA's statutory requirement to look at indirect effects to what happens in the U.S., where there is some impacts that can most certainly be identified and quantified with some sense of confidence. Jeff, you want to talk about what some of those might be specifically?
Well, sure. I mean, I think there's a case to be made that crop switching here in the United States could be analyzed with, you know, anticipated with much more certainty than similar outcomes overseas. For instance, if you have a farmer in the central part of the Corn Belt that decides to forego his soybean rotation one year and do corn on corn, that may send a market signal to a farmer in Alabama or somewhere in the southeast who may then decide to plant soybeans on an acre of ground formerly dedicated to cotton or some other crop. That's just an example of a domestically occurring indirect land use change that could be reasonably anticipated using the current USDA infrastructure of surveys and reporting, which those similar systems just don't exist internationally. In terms of your question on satellite imagery, and what EPA is doing is they contracted with a company called Winrock International, and Winrock took MODIS satellite imagery from the period of 2001 to 2004, so a very small snapshot in time. And they've used that to do some trend analysis, and they're assuming that the land use changes that were identified by those satellite images in that brief window of time will be similar moving forward. We have several problems with that. 2001 to 2004 was a period of accelerated forest conversion in South America, and we've seen significant slowing in deforestation in the last 4 or 5 years. So to use that very, very short time frame to try and predict what's going to happen in the future, I think, is problematic. Another problem that I'll mention real briefly with the satellite imagery is that it just carries inherently a very high degree of uncertainty. The confidence values for certain land cover classes is, you know, in the 60-70% range, which means, you know, it's safe to assume that for locations where the satellite is saying a land use change occurred, 30 or 40% of the time that you know, that's going to be wrong.
Chuck Abbott is with Reuters.
Last week there was some rather indefinite remarks from various people in Democratic leadership in the House on the Hill saying that leadership was trying to address agriculture's concerns about EPA treatment of biofuels. Can you give us any thoughts, facts on what's happening on the Hill to satisfy your concerns or those raised by people in the Agriculture Committee about the EPA proposed rule?
Well, of course, Chairman Peterson, Chairman of the House Ag Committee, has been a real leader on this effort. He convened a hearing for several of us to be able to air some of our concerns with respect to the use of international indirect effects in EPA's life cycle analysis, and it created, I think, quite a stir within the ag community and members representing rural districts. So I think that there are a number of members now that are quite concerned about how EPA is going about its analysis, and concerned about the inappropriate inclusion of international indirect effects. And I think there may be some effort before the bill gets to the floor, or certainly before the bill would get to the president's desk, to address some of those issues. But fundamentally, I mean, EPA has it within its own authority to address this issue, and legislation should not be necessary. And we would hope that EPA is paying attention to what is going on Capitol Hill, and will be prepared to make the changes necessary so that legislation is not required.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Stephen Cook with the Daily Environment Report.
Hi. Doesn't the law require indirect land use change? And I mean, how much leeway does EPA have in departing from the course they've taken? I know that you and others have said that deforestation has slowed and that corn imports from the United States are up despite increasing ethanol production. But basically, does EPA have the authority just to say we're not going to do international land use change analysis?
Well, Steve, you are correct in that the statute requires EPA to look at significant indirect effects, but it does not say international indirect effects. And the agency has considerable flexibility to determine just what was meant by that. I can tell you that Congress did not expect EPA to be looking at international impacts, and clearly the modeling isn't prepared to evaluate that yet in any way, shape, or form. So we think that EPA really has overstepped its mandate from Congress and has abandoned its principle of looking at sound science on this issue. Jeff, you want to talk a little bit more about any of the specific modeling issues that might arise as a result of moving beyond just indirect effects to international?
Well, yeah, I think you know, I think the question hit the nail on the head when it when he referred to exports. Exports are the trigger for international land use change in the modeling framework that EPA is using. And by that I mean, if the model says that exports are reduced significantly, then that's the behavior that causes land to be converted internationally. Currently, EPA's models are predicting that for every 1 million gallons of ethanol, of new ethanol that comes online, we'll see a reduction of about 3,000 tons of corn. If you kind of test that assumption against what's happened in the last 5 years, what we see is that every new million gallons of ethanol actually corresponded with a 6,600-ton increase in corn exports. So there's a real disconnect between these modeling outcomes and what has been observed in the real world in the last several years, and that's a problem.
Did you say they assume that 1 million gallons of new ethanol reduces corn exports by 3,000 tons?
That's correct.
All right, that has absolutely not happened in the real world.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Edward Felker with Washington Times.
Would you comment more broadly on whether you feel this administration is pro-ethanol or not, and whether its allies on the Hill, especially the Speaker and Chairmen Waxman and Markey, simply are deaf to ethanol, or feel that ethanol is getting already a good deal? What's your take on it? It seems like Colin Peterson is the only person taking up your case right now. I'm sure that's a simplification, but he seems to be out there by himself working on this. What's your take on the political landscape? Is it tilted against you all?
Oh, Ed, I don't think it's tilted against us at all in any way, shape, or form. All you need to do is look at the letter that President Obama sent to the Governor's Biofuels Coalition a couple of weeks ago, in which he made it perfectly clear that this administration is going to continue to promote and encourage the increased production and use of fuel ethanol from all its feedstocks. Clearly, we want to move, as the industry wants to move, toward increased cellulosic production. But I think President Obama and the administration has recognized that you're not going to have a second-generation ethanol industry if you don't have a healthy first-generation ethanol industry. And I don't think Congressman Peterson is out there alone at all. I think he's supported by a number of scores of members that are committed
to... chair people or members in leadership?
I think
I understand there's a lot of foreign lawmakers that are with him on this, but he seems to be the only one in leadership right now that is making this case on your behalf, not including the Senate, of course.
Well, I think the leadership as well, though. They want this program to succeed. They recognize the stakes that are involved, and I think you wouldn't have Speaker Pelosi and Majority Leader Hoyer making comments about the need to address some of these concerns were they not committed to assuring the continued growth and development of the ethanol industry. But they also recognize that, as I've been saying, if EPA doesn't get the metric for carbon evaluation right in this very first rule, that it will undermine future carbon legislation. So I think the leadership is absolutely committed to resolving these issues.
Our next question comes from Dan Looker with Successful Farming Magazine.
Bob, I just had one follow-up question about the proposed rule.
Mm-hmm.
The way it's written, would it be a stretch to say that ethanol plants would be required to buy identity-preserved grain?
Jeff, you want to take this one?
Yeah, I that isn't a stretch, Dan. I think the existing cropland provision that within the renewable biomass definition is very much akin to an identity preservation program where the end user of that grain has to trace the origination of that grain all the way back to the farm level. So no, I don't think it's a stretch at all to characterize what is required under that provision as being similar to identity preservation.
I'm Cindy Zimmerman with the Ethanol Report.